Good day. I'm Kim Harden, and I'm filling in for your regular Pantograph reader for Tuesday, June 16th, 2026. I usually like to start with the weather, so just bringing you Bloomington's five-day forecast. Today, shower and thunderstorm, windy, 10 to 20 miles an hour with a high of 75, and tonight, a low of 56 and partly cloudy. Tomorrow, calling for thunderstorms, some severe. I heard this morning maybe between 3 o'clock and 5 o'clock, but it could be later than that as well. High will be 75, low 60. South-southeast winds 12 to 25 miles an hour. Thursday, maybe a passing morning shower, but looking like a beautiful day. 70 and low of 57, and Friday, sunny and nice, 76 the high, 59 the low, into the rest of your weekend for Saturday. Showers are possible, high of 77 and low of 61. Pretty average winds for us, south-southwest, 7 to 14 miles an hour. So you will likely need your bumper chutes and umbrellas tomorrow. Back to the front page, starting with a story in the Middle East. Deal eases energy shares. U.S.-Iran agreement lowers risk of supply disruption in the Strait. A story written from the Reuters Press by Aramina Kumar, Pujaminar, Leila Bassam, and Steve Shear. U.S. energy shares fell Monday as crude prices dropped after Washington and Tehran agreed on terms to end their months-long conflict and reopen the Strait of Hormuz, a vital oil transit choke point. The U.S. and Iran will sign a memorandum of understanding in Switzerland on Friday, said the Prime Minister of Pakistan, which helped mediate talks between the two sides. U.S. President Trump said Sunday the Strait of Hormuz, which carries about a fifth of the global oil consumption, would be open toll-free and that a U.S. naval blockade of Iranian ports would end. Brent crude futures fell 5.5% to $82.55 per barrel Monday morning, while the U.S. West Texas Intermediate crude was down 5.87% at $79.96 per barrel. Energy stocks surged after the conflict broke, driven by escalating fears of supply disruption through the Strait. The S&P 500 Energy Index gained 23.4% so far this year. Markets will price in a large optimism discount that normality is returning, although we would caution that flows are not likely to resume to anywhere near pre-war levels for months, and investors should follow how quickly Gulf producers are able to resume oil production and exports following damage from the war, and whether more ships will enter the region, said Ashley Kelly, an analyst at Panmure Liberum. Refining stocks rallied during the conflict as disruptions to Middle Eastern oil flows boosted fuel margins and drove stronger demands for U.S. fuel exports. Some analysts, however, warned that oil markets might be moving ahead of reality. The market remains much more responsive to optimistic Trump comments rather than global oil balances that could continue to tighten through the rest of the summer, Ritterbach and Associates said in a note. Emotion and sentiment appear to be overruling fundamentals as hopes for an end to the war are being prioritized over the current low level of global stock cover that is approaching critical levels, it said. Fighting in Lebanon. Fighting in Lebanon in the south eased on Monday after the U.S.-Iran deal to end the wider conflict was announced, but an Israeli drone strike killed one person and authorities warned displaced people not to rush home as Israel said it would keep troops in the south. Lebanon suffered the deadliest spillover of the conflict between the U.S. and Iran, with almost 3,800 people killed and about 1.2 million people uprooted by an Israeli offensive against the Iran-backed Hezbollah group, which opened fire on Israel in support of Tehran on March 2nd. Pakistan, a key mediator between Tehran and Washington, announced that a deal was struck early on Monday local time that called for the immediate and permanent termination of military operations on all fronts, including in Lebanon. The declaration brought relative calm to southern Lebanon, Lebanese and foreign security sources said. An Israeli drone strike on a car in the southern Lebanese town of Kfar Tibnat killed the driver, a Lebanese security source and Lebanese state media said. There was no immediate comment from the Israeli military on the strike. The local and foreign security sources earlier said Israel significantly reduced its attacks, though some artillery fire was reported in southern Lebanese towns and a drone was heard above Beirut and its southern suburbs. A Hezbollah official told Reuters the group didn't carry out any operations since the deal was announced, adding that its position on the ceasefire was linked to Israel adhering to it. The official, who declined to be named, added that Hezbollah rejects Israeli freedom of movement in Lebanon and said Iran delayed signing the deal with U.S. to monitor Israel's adherence to the ceasefire in Lebanon. Israel troops will stay. In a written statement Monday before Israel's drone strike, Hezbollah welcomed the U.S.-Iran deal, saying it resulted in a comprehensive ceasefire, including in Lebanon. The Tehran-backed group warned Israel that it would not accept any attacks that violate Lebanon's sovereignty or target its people, and said Lebanon's inclusion in the agreement reflected Iran's commitment to ending the war. In South Lebanon, municipal councils called on residents to hold off on returning home. Israel's Air Force was heavily bombed, some local towns there over the last 3 months, and others closer to the frontier are still occupied by Israeli troops. Mona Mazah, a displaced woman sheltering in Beirut's Hamra district, had no immediate plans to return to her village near the southern city of Tyre. "Frankly, we are hesitant. Israel cannot be trusted," she said. Israeli Defense Minister Israel Katz, whose country is not a party to the U.S.-Iran deal, said Israel would not withdraw from security zones in southern Lebanon, Gaza, and Syria, and that it would retaliate if Iran attacked Israel due to events in Lebanon. Katz said the security zone in southern Lebanon would be cleared of local residents and all terrorists' infrastructure, including houses and contact villages, a reference to Hezbollah. The Israeli military has been raising villages in southern Lebanon for weeks, claiming to be acting against Hezbollah militants embedded in civilian areas of the predominantly Shiite Muslim region. Hundreds of thousands of Lebanese Shiites are sheltering in other parts of the country. And here's a bit of an analytical breakdown by Samia Nakul of the Reuters Press. Gulf recalibrates as Iran emerges intact from the war. In Beirut, the U.S.-Iran deal may silence the guns, but it cannot alter the verdict of more than 3 months of war. The region emerged from one of its most dangerous crises in decades, with the balance of power broadly unchanged, Iran politically emboldened, and Gulf confidence in the U.S. protection deeply shaken, Gulf sources, diplomats, and analysts say. Iran remains a formidable and undefeated force capable of threatening Gulf Arab states and global energy flows, they say, while the United States again revealed the limits of military power against a resilient adversary. For Washington, the deal offers an exit from a costly confrontation that failed to deliver its most ambitious objectives, from forcing Tehran's capitulation to dismantling its nuclear and missile capabilities, the sources add. For Iran, it amounts to something equally significant, survival. After absorbing relentless U.S. and Israeli strikes, the Islamic Republic emerges battered but standing, preserving both its political establishment and much of the leverage that brought the parties to the table. "Epic fury has been an epic disaster," said David Miller, former U.S. official and negotiator, referring to the U.S.-Israeli campaign launched on Iran on February 28th that killed Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei and top officials. Sunni Gulf states. The memorandum of understanding to be signed on Friday provides for a 60-day cessation of hostilities during which the two sides will negotiate a permanent settlement, including disputes over Iran's enriched uranium stockpile. The sharpest shock, however, is being felt in the Sunni Arab Gulf states, where the stability behind decades of economic growth has been sharply challenged. By this measure, they are the war's main losers. Spectators to decisions that reshaped their security landscape, now left to absorb the fallout. The deal, Gulf sources say, has already begun to reshape Gulf strategic thinking, eroding confidence in U.S. protection, entrenching Iran as an enduring regional force, and accelerating a shift towards accommodation rather than confrontation. A senior Gulf government source put it bluntly, any de-escalation is positive, but the situation is unequivocally worse than before the war. The emerging deal also appears unfavorable to Israel, according to three Israeli officials, as it omits its core demands, including dismantling Iran's enrichment capability and limits on its missile program. Officials say Israel was caught off guard when U.S. President Trump signaled Thursday that a deal was close, highlighting its limited influence over the terms. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu raised the issue directly with Trump, according to a statement from his office, which stressed that Israel was not party to the agreement and outlined its conditions for a final deal, ending Iran's nuclear ambitions. Far-right National Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir rejected the deal, saying Israel was not bound by it in any way. Engagement with Iran. The agreement may end this phase of the conflict, Gulf sources say, but it does not resolve the strategic dilemma it has exposed. Iran remains a potent force. The Strait of Hormuz has emerged as a recurring pressure point, and the assumptions underpinning Gulf economies look more fragile than at any point in recent memory. For Gulf states, the U.S.-Israeli campaign triggered precisely the consequences they long feared. Iranian strikes on energy and civilian infrastructure and disruption to Hormuz, dealing with heavy economic blow. Gulf capitals might welcome a pause in fighting, but many are drawing a sobering conclusion. Neither U.S. nor Israeli forces removed the Iranian challenge, while the costs of confrontation fell disproportionately on those caught in between. More and more Gulf states are coming to realize that Iran is here to stay, that it retains the capacity to disrupt the regional order, said Middle East scholar Fawaz Girgis. The Gulf states don't trust Iran. They had hoped the United States would bring about regime change. The reverse has happened. Now, more and more Gulf rulers realize they cannot depend on the U.S. or Israel to deliver security or stability. That reassessment marks a deeper shift. Gulf states have long distrusted Iran, but relied on U.S. power to contain it. Now, engagement with Tehran has already begun. Gulf capitals intensified contacts with Tehran lately, seeking economic and security understandings to reduce the risk of confrontation, regional sources say. Before the war, the central regional question was the scope of Arab-Israeli normalization, Girgis said. In its aftermath, the focus is shifting toward Gulf-Iran accommodation. Missed objectives. Saudi analyst Abdulaziz Sagar is more explicit. In his view, Washington failed to deliver its declared objectives from regime change to curbing Iran's nuclear program while handing Tehran two new points of strategic leverage, the weaponization of Hormuz and the ability to directly threaten Gulf states. The Americans switched from unconditional surrender to an MOU. They caved in, said Sagar, chairman of the Saudi-based Gulf Research Center. They said they would change the Iranian regime. They couldn't. They said they would resolve the missile and nuclear file. That didn't happen. Moving towards state news, looking at the Illinois libraries, Nicole Hytrek and the UI Springfield Public Affairs reporting for Capital News Illinois. New program expands library access. Residents get more free research access. Illinoisans now will have access to a large collection of high-quality digital information and educational resources for free by going to their local library or the Illinois State Library's website. The Illinois Reliable Information Sources, or IRIS, program was announced last week by Secretary of State Alexi Giannoulias. The state entered a contract with EBSCO Information Services, a digital library resource program used by universities, schools, and libraries to provide access to more than 50 of their databases to all Illinois residents. It could not be immediately determined how much money went into the program. While it's common for libraries to have resources for research, not all libraries are able to pay for these kinds of services. Access to reliable information should not depend on a person's zip code or the financial resources of their local library, Giannoulias said in a news release. This investment will ensure every Illinois resident has access to educational, professional, and personal enrichment resources while helping libraries stretch limited budgets and better serve their communities. The new service includes free access to online databases with ebooks, peer-reviewed journals, magazines, newspapers, and research databases. Those collections include a diverse range of topics such as business, education, health, technology, science, and more. The program is also available for academic libraries, which means students and educators will be able to use these databases for research projects and instruction. Libraries that already subscribe to other digital information services will be able to use this program and redirect the subscription money to other needs. Illinois libraries are funded by a mix of property taxes and state and federal grants. Librarians have said it's often difficult to decide what to prioritize when budgets get tight, and many Illinois libraries have reported they don't offer online database subscriptions. As part of last year's budget implementation bill, Giannoulias advocated for expanded eligibility for equalization aid grants to support more public libraries across the state. That effort increased the number of libraries receiving these grants from 17 to 108. According to the Reaching Across Illinois Library System, a regional library system that serves libraries in northern and west central Illinois, approximately 1 million Illinoisans live without access to public library services, and this program will cover them too. This statewide database will have a profound impact on libraries, Amy Byers, Library Director for Chatham Public Library and former president of the Illinois Library Association, said. It will help us expand services and continue to provide great resources to our patrons without having to weigh the option of having good quality online resources. Jenna Schweikert of Capital News Illinois writes, from Illinois Hunger Relief, food aid nonprofits eligible for new grants. Small volunteer groups that provide food assistance to Illinoisans in need could be eligible for a new round of grant money under a program announced this week. The Charitable Trust Hunger Relief Grant Program will provide grants of up to $5,000 to 10 nonprofit organizations that don't have full-time employees to purchase food for those in need. Applications opened June 1st and will remain open through July 31st, Illinois Treasurer Michael Frerix announced on June 10th. The announcement comes as food assistance groups experience increased need due to cuts in federal food assistance, including the Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program, Feeding America, the country's largest domestic hunger relief organization, states that for every meal the organization provides, SNAP provides 9. Hunger and food insecurity is a hidden epidemic afflicting children who cannot ask for help and adults who find it difficult to ask for help as they juggle two or more jobs, Frerich said in a statement June 10th. Small local food pantries and soup kitchens are prepared to help these innocent lives because they see those suffering in the shadows. That is why we created this desperately needed hunger relief program, as these organizations try to help people get food as affordability remains a major concern. The Hunger Relief Program is part of a larger charitable trust fund created in 2007 that helps small nonprofits with annual budgets of $1 million or less and at least one full-time employee. The fund is supported by fees paid by larger nonprofit corporations when they file annual incorporation reports with the Illinois Secretary of State. This round, however, is open to organizations without full-time employees who did not previously qualify. An 11-member committee made up of appointees from state government agencies and private citizens oversees management of the funds and selects grant recipients. Here's a story about the data centers. that are being built everywhere or going being proposed. Valerie Volkovici and Jason Lang of the Reuters Press take a poll. Americans wary of data center boom. Just 1 in 3 Americans approve of the fast pace of data center construction that supports artificial intelligence, and most would oppose building one of their own community, according to a new Reuters Ipsos poll. The poll results reflect widespread public unease over the data center boom in the United States, an issue high on the minds of voters and political campaigns ahead of the November 3rd midterm elections. President Trump's administration prioritizes rapid AI development, citing China as a competitive rival, and directed federal agencies to accelerate permitting for infrastructure tied to the sector. The 6-day poll, which surveyed 4,531 people across the country and closed on Monday, showed just 33% of Americans agreed with a statement that it was mainly a good thing to build data centers at a rapid pace. Some 64% disagreed. Support for rapid data center construction was a little higher among Republicans than Democrats. About 57% of people surveyed, including 2/3 of Democrats and half of the Republicans, also say they would oppose a data center being built in their community. Just 14% of survey takers said they were okay with a center being built near them, according to the Reuters Ipsos poll. There are 710 data centers now operating in the United States and another 1,062 planned projects, according to CleanView, a research firm tracking data centers. AI algorithms require data centers to burn through copious amounts of electricity, and the projects often take up big swaths of land and consume large amounts of water without providing significant numbers of long-term jobs. Ahead of the midterm, some Democrats, including progressive U.S. Senate candidate Graham Platner from Maine, are campaigning on the risk that data centers could drive up electricity prices, aiming to seize on Republican vulnerability over rising inflation, as the national average for gasoline has exceeded $4 a gallon for more than 2 months. That message could resonate. Some 77% of survey respondents, including similar shares of Republican, Democrats, and Independents, said they were worried that AI would make electricity more expensive, according to the Reuters Ipsos poll. "That is extremely concerning for me," said Mark Tompkins, one of the survey respondents, a 65-year-old Republican who lives in the rural part of Hancock County outside of Indianapolis and works as a senior project manager for a telecom company. "My electric bills are high as it is." The Indianapolis Metropolitan Development Commission will consider a proposed $2 billion data center development on the east side of the city by developer DC Blocks, even after vocal opposition to the project during a packed hearing in April. Retired South Bend resident Lauren Smith, 72, another Republican survey respondent, said he is also concerned about the speed at which the data centers and their infrastructure are being built and the lack of transparency from developers and local officials about their projects. "Politicians are being very secretive about what they are offering the companies as far as tax breaks," said Smith, adding that data centers are among his top three issues in the midterm elections. "Concerns about data centers relate to broader worries that the rapid expansion of AI could upend the labor market. Half of Americans fear that AI could put them or someone in their household out of work," the poll found. Back to national news, international news. Trump eyes ending Ukraine war. IMF leader warns of possible economic fallout from conflicts. Steve Holland, Michael Rose, and Gabriel Stargartner of Reuters Press. In Avion-les-Bains, France, President Donald Trump joined global leaders on Monday at the Group of Seven summit at a French lakeside resort, where he touted his preliminary deal to end the Iran war and said he would now seek to end the fighting in Ukraine and Lebanon. Trump's arrival at the G7 summit in Avion-les-Bains comes as global leaders now grow increasingly wary of the United States. While many of them expressed relief that a deal could bring closure to the Iran conflict, it was tempered by unease over new Trump tariff threats aimed at France and his warnings about the dangers of immigration. In comments to the media alongside French President Emmanuel Macron, Trump said he would now turn his attention to trying to secure peace between Ukraine and Russia while also seeking to bring closure to fighting in Lebanon. We had a very good conversation yesterday with President Zelensky and President Putin, and I think we can do something there. I really do. I think they're both open to it, he said. The fallout from the wars in Eastern Europe and the Middle East is just one of several issues G7 leaders will wrestle with during the summit this week. They will also seek common ground on lacking global economic imbalances, sourcing critical minerals outside of the dominant supplier, China, and artificial intelligence. While the world economy is weathering the shock of the war in the Middle East with no signs yet of a global slowdown, risks remain high, International Monetary Fund Chief Kristalina Georgieva said Monday. Georgieva, who will brief G7 leaders on the global economy this week, warned in a blog that intensification of the conflict and supply disruptions posed a clear risk to global growth. The IMF will release an updated global growth forecast July 8th. In April, it issued three scenarios for global gross domestic product growth in 2026 and 2027, with its middle adverse scenario calling for a slowdown to 2.5% in 2026 and headline inflation of 5.4%. Georgieva last month said that adverse scenario was already in play, but her latest comments suggested the IMF may revert to its reference scenario, which assumed a short-lived Iran war and projected growth of 3.1% in 2026. Looking at the digest, some brief clips from The Nation and the World. California Governor Trump going after him and his family. Los Angeles. California Governor Gavin Newsom on Monday accused President Trump of directing the Justice Department to undertake a politically motivated investigation of him and his wife. Donald Trump isn't just coming after me because of my mean tweets, Newsom said in a video statement posted to social media. He's coming after me because I am considering running for president. Federal law enforcement officers in Sacramento, California, have been conducting several investigations related to the governor, including into his wife, since 2025, a person familiar with the matter said, speaking on the condition of anonymity because they were not authorized to speak publicly. Judge dismisses Musk's lawsuit against OpenAI. A federal judge dismissed a lawsuit Monday by Elon Musk's artificial intelligence company, XAI, that accused rival Sam Altman's OpenAI of stealing trade secrets for chatbots. U.S. District Judge Rita Lynn in San Francisco said XAI failed to show that OpenAI induced former XAI senior engineer Zhuchen Li to divulge confidential information related to its Grok chatbot, or that OpenAI engineers knew Li might have disclosed any. Lynn dismissed the lawsuit with prejudice, saying it would be futile to continue. She dismissed an earlier version in February. The lawsuit, originally filed in September, focused on broader alleged misappropriation of confidential information, including source code, when XAI employees left jobs at OpenAI. Delta outage. The Trump administration said Monday it closed an investigation without seeking penalties into a July 2024 meltdown at Delta Airlines sparked by global outage that disrupted the travel plans of 1.3 million customers. A U.S. Transportation Department spokesperson said the review showed that Delta's passengers received prompt refunds, adequate baggage assistance, and appropriate assistance for passengers with disabilities. Gun industry. The U.S. Supreme Court on Monday turned away a gun industry challenge to a New York law that permits lawsuits against gun makers, wholesalers, and dealers for endangering people's safety through the sales of firearms and ammunition. Media deal. In a deal announced Monday, Fox Corporation will buy Roku in a cash and stock deal valued at about $22 billion, marking a significant bet for the broadcaster that the streaming platform will strengthen its advertising business and expand online reach for sports and news content. Ukraine War, a 1,000-year-old monastery in Kiev that symbolizes Ukraine's spiritual and cult heritage, was damaged Monday in a major attack by Russia that killed 10 people nationwide after President Trump spoke to both countries about ending the war. That concludes part one of the Pantograph for today. This is Kim Harden. I'll be back in a few minutes for part two.